woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jazz. I'm Tom House. He's Jay-Z on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill, S&P futures up 4, Dow futures up 30, NASDAQ futures up 24. Kevin, if you don't hear Jay-Z in a second, it's because we're having an input of by five of the world's tightest outdoor outfits, and we're going to send her down and put her on the beach in front of the wind to blow her into the water with a camera crew and talk about the hurricane.
Yeah, I think live remote seems appropriate, doesn't it?
Yeah, especially
the simulated live remote.
Nothing is, gives you a better idea of what the high surf is if it crashes over your reporter. Just saying.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. In fact, it's even more compelling if the waves can come crashing over the reporter and wash the reporter back out to sea, never to be seen again.
Yes. But we would not have to happen to Jay-Z, though. We'd have to have a tether on her of some kind.
We can haul her. That's like my biggest fear. I'm so afraid of water. Drowning.
Well, as your executive producer, fellow Matt Weber said, what do you say, Kevin? He's never going to die skydiving, he's never going to die eaten by a shark. He knows that for sure.
Yeah, okay. I get that.
skydiving isn't even scary.
Are you willing to go with the skydiving thing, Jay-Z?
I've gone skydiving before.
Really?
Yep.
What possessed you to do that?
It was my cousin's birthday, and
what's the connection between jumping out of a plane and somebody's birthday, just out of curiosity?
He's an adrenaline junkie.
Ah.
But who isn't nowadays, honestly? Like, my whole generation's filled with adrenaline junkies.
I wouldn't know. I'd always see them staring at their cell phones.
Not me.
Ah. Well, by the way, did you get my text to my alternate number?
Yep. Chief forgot his phone this morning, guys.
Yes, but I have a backup phone, Kevin. I'm ready.
If
you ask me what my backup phone number...
So who else is asking why Chief has two phones?
Keeps a backup phone.
Well, what happens if you lose the other one in the house and you don't have a landline? How do you call it to find out where it is?
You don't lose your phone.
I see. Anyway.
Tom, I live, when it comes to things like that, and things like my keys and, you know, those kinds of things, my approach is binary. It's in one of two places. It is either in my pocket, or there's only one other place it could be, and
your
that's
hand.
Where I put it when it's not in my pocket.
I see. Well, if
I learned a long time ago, after losing keys a couple of times, that was no way to go.
Well, anywho, my flip phone, for those that need to know, I have one of these, what do you call them, like a third-party provider for my stuff?
A burn phone?
Yeah, like what do you call it?
Walmart, or it's not Walmart, it's Ting. But so if you have two phones, you have to buy the phone, right? But if you have two phones... It's only another $6 a month. So, unlike the smartphone, which I've moved over to, even though I use about 1% of it, the other phone actually goes a week without a charge or anything like that. So if you actually, for $6 a month, at the very least, you'd want to just wing it in your car, just in case you ever needed it for like a real... Remember when you got your phone because of emergency situations? And it got to the smartphone, which only runs for eight hours before you have to charge it up again? So anyway, it is actually a phone for backup. So today I'm using it. So, but the only problem is I don't know.
Are you familiar with Google Voice? I know we aren't necessarily all Google lovers nowadays, but
no.
Voice is kind of a nice service because you have one phone number and it will ring whatever phone you tell it to ring.
I see.
Your cell, a landline, you know what, and you can give it as many as you want.
You know, I asked these guys if I could have the same number on both phones, and the answer was no.
No, you have to go subscribe to a third party service like Google. But it's free, and I started using it, I don't know, more than 10 years ago, because at my house, the cell service is better now, but at the time, I was so perfectly situated between cell towers, in towers that were in Michigan and Indiana, and in those days, Indiana wasn't on daylight savings time, so at that time of year, I could walk out in my backyard and pick up Eastern time on my cell phone, and I could walk out my front to the street and pick up Indiana time on my phone, and if I went in the house, I got nothing. So I needed a landline, and I only wanted to have one number. So I subscribed to Google Voice, and my phones are set up so that the number that you know is actually a Google Voice number ringing both phones at the same time, and whichever one I feel like answering is the one I answer.
Really? Yeah, I have a question for you.
And then if you use the app on your smartphone, it'll dial out with that caller ID so that people don't get confused.
I see. I have a question for you, because I'm going to be confusing people all day calling them on this other line. Our girl Jay-Z, when we were talking last week, I was driving her in, and I said, you know, we're talking about security and how people, and I asked her, I said, hey, Jay-Z, if you went to the store, and I want to keep it clean, and we're in the, you know, looking at bathing suits, and nobody's bringing a camera into the changing room or anything, but, and all of a sudden you walked out, and somebody ran out and snapped a picture of your license plate and started sending, catalogs to your house on bathing suits, and somebody followed you around to do that, you'd be probably amazingly pissed off. And not speaking for her, the answer was yes. Yet it's exactly what we go through online. People sell the information. I mean, it's not really nobody's business if Jay-Z was looking at a bathing suit, or certainly if you or I were looking for a bathing suit at the end of the rack, Kevin. But Jay-Z brought something up and said, you know, when she and her friends are just talking about stuff sometime, the stuff starts to appear on your phone. And Jay-Z, weren't you wondering if whether they're actually listening in?
Oh, I guarantee it. It's literally impossible for them not to have, where you just, like, open up a completely different app or something, and you have ads for the things that you were just talking about just yesterday.
Kevin, do you have any idea if that's true?
I need to do a little research on that, and I will, because in one of my classes I have a privacy section coming up, so I'll get to it.
How are you ever going to find out if it's true?
I'll do a little research. There's good sources out there. You just have to be persistent.
All right. Well, speaking of persistent, we're happy that the hurricane did not hit as a Category 4. It actually hit like as a 1, so it was a 90-mile-an-hour wind, which is bad enough, but it's not going to tear down city buildings and probably would spare most houses. We're 130. I don't think spares anything. But they've got massive, massive amounts of water. And they're going to, you know, basically floods out the behind for a while. So I feel sorry for those people, but it's still not as bad as people thought.
Right. And it's not only a cleanup, standing water for any period of time can be so hard on the foundation of a home.
Oh, yeah. That's so.
I think there will be some long-lasting damage from this.
I would certainly agree. And an awful lot of... And you wonder, insurance companies, even though I've invested in some once in a while, my clients, could there be any biggest slime balls on earth when it comes to actually paying out on this stuff? I mean, oh no, it wasn't the wind, it was the water, it was the rain, it wasn't the flood, it wasn't the river. I mean, there's going to be all kinds of people here that have flood damage. We go through this every time there's a storm, we talk about it on the air a little bit. I'm going to say that a solid 50-60% of the flood damage in this thing is going to be to people who are not in a, 100-year storm flood plain and do not have flood insurance,
yeah,
that are going to be just screwed.
Insurance.
They're going to be just screwed. How many people?
Yeah, I don't know, never having owned property in hurricane territory, I don't know what is standard procedure in that area.
Well, I'm guessing.
I'm sure more so in Florida than North Carolina that people people insure against it, at least to some degree.
I would agree. But I mean, it just, if you're talking about some massive rainfall, like if all of a sudden we had some storm that didn't move out of Chicago, and say we got 8-9 inches of rain, which they did 1 year near O'Hara, but not over the whole area. And if you got that, there are plots. I mean, especially, you know, Audrey's in real estate, and you know something about it. And I had my license at one point, years and years ago. There are plots where somebody's going to say, somebody from the government, and this is why one of the dangers of, you know, weather shifting, changing. I'm not going to say, you know, who's causing what where, you know, a whole other discussion. But the fact is, there seems to be some more extreme weather. Seems to be. If you were to say to somebody, there's always somebody somewhere who knows something. And somewhere buried in the bowels of the county or the state, you'll say to somebody, okay, where are all the floodplains? And the guy will say, okay, in 100 years, we're going to have 3 storms or 2 storms. They're going to be bad enough, and here's where the water's going to go. And if you got a little creek in your backyard, it looks pretty harmless. There's going to be once in every 50 years where it may make it to your basement. It may make it to the front. But it'll never make it across the street. Okay, but that's there's going to be a spot where one guy has to buy flood insurance and a guy 2 feet higher doesn't have to. I mean, people have been charting our country, you know, for a long, long time. So there's people that know all this stuff. And, the question comes down is what happens if it's, you know, the 100-year storm is 9 inches and all of a sudden you get 12. And all of a sudden the people across the street that are not in a floodplain, you don't normally have that insurance on your homeowners. But when you go to buy a home, for those of you who aren't anywhere near water, there's a spot on there that says flood insurance required. Now that flood insurance, you normally, if you're in a floodplain, which, what do you think that is, Kevin? 3 times a century you're supposed to get water or something? That you have to, you're required to buy, the bank will make you, well, you can buy it cash, you can do whatever you want, but if you get a mortgage, the bank is going to make you buy that insurance separately from the government, correct? That's the way that works? And,
yeah, you have to buy into the,
we don't have, you know, I mean, you have to if you got a mortgage. You don't have to if you're willing to wing it on your right. own, you know, and you pay for your own house.
Pay cash, you don't have to.
Yeah. And, so the problem comes down is not the people that are, quote, in the floodplain. It's the people who are not. And this is really a 400-year storm or whatever you want to call it. So yeah, all those guys, Kevin lived down there. We had the nice homes by the Fox River, so guess what? Kevin's buying flood insurance. I'm 50 feet up from there. I've never had to buy it, and all of a sudden we got this storm that lasted 3 weeks, and I'm underwater. I'm probably not covered, is my point. Didn't get there too short, but long story short, too late, huh? But somebody, I'm going to say that half these people are not going to be covered, and they're in trouble, I'm guessing. So, I mean, it's not a good thing.
Yeah. So yeah, there will be expense. Now I'm sure when it gets declared a disaster area, that there is some additional relief available.
Loans, probably loans. Yeah. Well, that's why if you look at some hurricanes, the number to get, like the one in Houston, I'm gonna say virtually 60-70% of the people who got flooded were not in floodplains. So when you look at, say, in Florida, like Kevin mentioned earlier, pretty much everybody has some sort of, you know, deal cooking, whether you either get the rider or you don't. And they'll say, there's a number you'll read months from now, and it'll say, you know, damage from Hurricane Florence will be, you know, $12 billion or some number. And it'll say covered damages. In Florida, they're likely to be 9 or 10, Kevin. In Houston, I'm guessing it was 3 or 4. So there's a
especially you know, considering that some of the areas there were never even close to considered floodplain areas.
Right. Oh yeah. That's my point. Because one of the guys who traded right next to me, I say you knew the people who traded in the pit since there was 350 people in this kind of small spot. Let's just say you became very acquainted with the people around you. Well, Ronnie Cusera, terrific guy. He and I sort of shared a spot because it was like a room for like 2 people if you really needed to, but by and large, you know, it was a really nice big spot for one person. Anyway, his parents had a spot down on the, is it politically correct to say the Redneck Riviera? Down on, like, in Biloxi or whatever, down there.
Along the Gulf Coast, yeah. Gulf Shores area, Alabama, Mississippi.
And they were like across the street, and they had this, you know, condominium complex, and it was one of the storms hits there, right? So I think his dad was dead by that time. Matter of fact, Boy, talk about weird, huh, Kevin? He came to my mom's wake on a Tuesday, and I went to his dad's wake the next night. How scary is that, huh? Yeah, and I found out his dad was a destroyer captain in, like, the South Pacific. He never told me. Of course, those guys never talked about it, those old dudes. But anyway, he goes down to see the place. It's gone. I mean, literally, the entire... There's a concrete slab where the place used to be. You know, I'm curious. What happens to all people's valuables? What happens to the paint? Some guy wake up, you know, 5 miles away and find somebody's, you know, jewelry box in the front lawn or what? I mean, what happens all this? I mean, it's kind of an amazing thought when you think about it. Because the place is gone. Well, of course, the insurance company said, oh, God, no, it wasn't the wind. It was the storm surge. You're out. They weren't getting him anything. And finally, after like 3 years of fighting, they got, you know, 30 cents on the buck or something. Because they said, oh, no, this wasn't wind. It was water and storm surge or something. How could you even tell?
I'd ask to see the video.
Well, I mean, nobody was there. It was evacuated. They go back and where's our place?
Oh, well,
oops. There's
my word against yours.
Yeah, there's
my speculation or your speculation.
Yeah, there's...
Who
all right.
Paid who for the coverage?
God, hey,
I know logic doesn't apply.
No, God, no. They're not quick to pay. But anywho, let's hope all these people the best out there, and I'm glad it was 90 miles an hour and not 120. So that's the good news. The bad news, I think, it's pretty darn wet, and that's supposed to go inland and then turn right up north and go into Ohio of all places, right? I mean, it's going to go and make this quick right turn. I love the way these models are really fascinating, aren't they? I mean, we watch this stuff, and these people can calculate all these things, and they're usually pretty darn right. Anywho, Kevin, did you watch the Cub game at all yesterday?
I actually was driving home from Indianapolis and listening to it and scratching my head and saying, you know, how many times do you guys really want to face Bryce Harper in a game situation?
Well, I mean, what would possess...
Get the run home!
Yeah, what would possess anybody... Now, of course, he's running out of players. To even had to play the guy that never plays, the guy who's just a runner. You had to put him in yesterday. He actually had a bat.
Yeah, and I read he got his first hit.
Really?
Over the weekend.
Yeah, good for him.
Ever, and he's been in the major. He's been around the major leagues for a long time.
Well, he's stolen 40 some bases. He's only batted 20 times or something.
Yeah.
Or so. Anyways, they put Contreras in. Please don't ever use that guy as a pinch hitter with bags loaded and one out. The huge third swing that would have fanned everybody in the park. He missed the ball by a foot and a half. You can't have that, Kevin. You got to touch that ball. Two guys in a row, him and Zobrist. Because Zobrist is usually pretty good on stuff like that. How do you go up and just whiff when you get guys on base like that? You got to cut it down some.
I will not understand it under any circumstances. That, you know, two strike hitting is not the same as everyone else. Put your bat on the ball. Of course, Pedro Strop put his bat on the ball, and it didn't work out so well either.
Well, but at least they got one. But the consensus of the people in the Triple E Tap was that we don't know how this team's not going to get too far.
Well, at this point, it's they may have won the battle and really harmed the WAR effort last night, losing Strop, because that's down two closers, and the bullpen, which had been really the strength of the team through about two thirds of the season, is now has not been very good lately, and Strop is one of the few that has been as reliable late in the season as he was early. So I think that's a tough loss. I don't know how they're going to navigate it. I actually think for the most part Madden has been incredible, kind of figuring out how to take a pitching staff that early in the season had very bad starting pitching, but good relief pitching, and then later in the season has gotten much better starting pitching, but hasn't gotten the relief, and I think he's navigated that pretty well.
I was between TVs when that happened. Why don't you explain to me and everybody what happened to Strop?
Oh, yeah, he came to bat in the top of the 10th inning. He had already pitched four outs, so I'm not quite sure why they batted him anyway. But he tapped one to third base. They came home, got the front end of the double play, and then threw Strop out, and running down the baseline or stepping on first base, it looks like he pulled a hamstring.
Oh, all right, so it's not like a broken ankle or something, though. But
no, so they're saying it's going to be a couple of weeks. But this is a bad time to lose your second, you know, your number two closer of the year for 2 weeks. So I think it's going to be it's going to be kind of dicey the rest of the way. Thank God it's the Reds, you know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping the Reds have that total slump buster mentality. They're there when you need them.
Well, you do have if you make it, you can, if you have somebody who's, I'll use the term versatile. I mean, you can have a Montgomery can say I'll be your closer for the playoffs. I mean, he's good enough. And he's been,
yeah.
He's done relief, and you don't need him as a starter, right? I mean, you could do that,
right? You're probably going to do three, maybe four starters, but you're really going to rely on Lester, Hamels, and Hendricks primarily, and because they space out the games and give you travel days, that's actually doable.
You think Hendricks is right now ahead of Quintana?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I forgot about Quintana. Yeah, so they'll go four. They'll go four, and they definitely don't need a fifth starter.
And I think that
will bolster the bullpen somewhat. Hendricks ahead of Quintana, I don't know about even, I think.
I think you got that kid from Detroit who's actually done pretty well this year, and he was the closer there. He might have to step up.
Oh,
Wilson.
Justin Wilson. Yeah,
yeah,
Justin Wilson has actually found his way into the circle of trust. So,
yeah.
After being a basket case last year when they got him, he's pitched pretty well.
Kevin, I got to talk.
And he may be the guy for the next couple of weeks that they try there first.
Yeah, I don't see when
he has the live arm, and he's not perfect, but he may be good enough to get him through. You know, they're going to have to duke it out with Milwaukee for first place. The other interesting race, though, is that St. Louis and the Dodgers are now a game apart for the wild card after the Dodgers got the Cardinals.
If you're, let's assume that's Milwaukee. Do you really care which one of those two teams you play in the one game playoff? I mean, they're both. I don't know. Is there one spectacular pitcher on either team that you don't want to face? Of course, if you're fighting for it till the end, that pitcher might have to pitch on that Sunday. So you don't even really. I mean, if you're the Brewers, I guess I wouldn't have that much of a preference who I played.
Whether it's the Dodgers or St. Louis, I don't know. So, right now, the Dodgers are hot, and right now, the Cardinals have cooled off after being very hot for a while. So I don't know. I want to play who's not hot.
Yeah, I think the Brewers are better than either one of those teams. Actually, well, I don't know. The Dodgers have the big payroll; they should be hot, but they've lost a couple of people. But then again, they went out and got the all-star shortstop, so in the short run, they probably didn't this guy's as good as, or maybe even better than the guy they lost, right?
Seager, yeah, I think Manny Machado's probably, at least offensively, he's a better player than Seager, but Seager's a better shortstop.
Yeah, I would say so. Hey, let's talk markets here a little bit, Kevin. There's enough people. And again, you know, you can always, when you get on TV, you're supposed to either be a huge bear or a huge bull so people remember you, which doesn't get me on TV much, but nor do I really want to. But that's another story. We've had an awful lot of people come out lately, and the David Teppers and the people that have, a lot of years in the business and have had a track record of success, and doesn't mean their next trade's going to be any better than yours or mine, but they've had, there's reason to listen to them. And a lot of people are either one of two camps at this point. You're either thinking that the huge sell-off, even though they had a big comeback yesterday in some of the, certainly in the Chinese markets, that the 20% difference this year between other markets going down and ours going up, is you either think that this is a predecessor of us going that way, or you think, the hell with those guys, and when we're done with this tariff thing and Trump whips them into shape or whatever he's doing, that somehow or another this is going to be better for them too or something, and they'll eventually come back on up. So you're kind of sort of in this camp with these currency fluctuations. You either think that somehow the Turkeys, the Argentinas, the Chinas of the world, or Venezuela are going to make this miraculous comeback. Not that China belongs in that group. They don't. Or you don't. And you can almost see like a difference in age, where the people who are older are kind of more worried than the people that are younger. Because the people that are younger, all they've seen is, no matter what the crisis, we just power along, we meaning the market. And it's kind of interesting to see the difference when people are talking. And I don't, just because you're older doesn't mean you're right. I mean, it's for sure. But it's, what do you see when you see that? We only got 30 seconds, but I bounce this off Kevin because he's not, quote, in this business, but he talks to enough people in management and companies and stuff that you must get a sense of what other people are thinking about this stuff, Kevin. I mean, why don't you start it up and then we'll finish it after the break.
Well, yeah, and I don't know. I don't have a great answer for that other than to say that, I think it's gathering storm clouds, but I think you have to worry about it. We're too interconnected not to.
All right, hang on to that. But S&P futures up 5.25. Dow futures up 49. NASDAQ futures up 27. Oil up 34 cents. 10-year yield 2.988. We're getting there. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamashi. He's Jay-Z on the board. Mr. Matt Weber. By the way, or now he's not Matt Weber. Matt Weber, he's got Matt Weber on the brain because Jay-Z is watching Matt Weber's dog. And to say that this has been an interesting couple of days, Jay-Z versus dog, Kevin, is an understatement. S&P futures up 5.25, Dow futures up 49, NASDAQ futures up 27, oil up 34 cents, 68.94. 10-year yield, as I just mentioned, 2.988. Over in Europe, we've got bumps to the upside, but not big. DAX up 40.3%, FTSE up 27.4%, CAC 40 up 19.4, so even across the board there pretty much. Over in Asia, a little bit of a mixed bag. Nikkei up 273 as they continue to bounce up. Now it's over 23,000, 23,094. They're in danger going under 22,000 early in the week, but they have bounced back. Shanghai down 5.2%, 26.81, but a big bounce back in the Hang Seng, 271 as a full percent, 27,000. 286, and again, they're up to over 27,000. Those guys have kind of decoupled last night a little bit, not sure why. Oil, as I said, up 34 cents. West Texas, Brent up 17. That spread is $9.50. So it's back under $10, but still pretty darn high. Gold, we've got up $4, 12.12. Silver up 2 cents, 14.26 is... They've come off the bottom there, and I'm thinking that maybe they've made a bottom, but we will see. Copper 267 down 0.6, so not much going on there. Jay-Z, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Thanks, Chief. Hello, hello, everyone. It is now 6:36. Chicago's looking warm and sunny today. These days are becoming fewer and fewer, so enjoy them while you can. Temperatures are going to reach up to 81 today and cool down to about 64. Similarly, Phoenix is also warm and sunny today. Today's high is 108 with a low of 76. In baseball, the Cubs won last night, securing a win after Baez hit a home run in the 10th inning, ending the game against the Nationals with a final score of 4-3. The White Sox are off, and the Diamondbacks suffered a loss against the Rockies, ending the game 10-3. Accident on the tri-state going north just before Lawrence. Expect at least 30-minute delays. Nothing else. Back to you.
Well, Kevin, complete your thought. Then I have a question to ask you regarding the ridiculous tweets the last few days from whatever President Bonespur, but
well, there's other ridiculous we need to mention
yeah.
too. But let's finish the thought. And I think it's real simple. Will the other markets take down the United States economy? It's probably more the reverse that is possible rather than having the markets do it. But on the other hand, it's hard to believe that. That it can't affect us because we're so interconnected.
You've led me into a question that I wasn't going to ask. I imagine you at least heard part of the discussion with Carl Deninger on Wednesday. And I don't expect a whole lot of people to keep tabs on these sort of numbers, but when you look at the economy that is growing some, and you look at some of those numbers where yet another chunk of people seem in the last couple of months to go into that not in labor force number, and you see the size of the debt blow up. Matter of fact, I have an article last night I read, and it's you're not supposed to be looking for confirmation, Kevin, but the only time I look for confirmation is if I do some research, you know, like you like to do, and I found some stats from different places. And matter of fact, I'll see if I can try and find this. But you find some stats from different places, and you kind of tie them together. And all of a sudden, one day, you stumble on an article where somebody did like a way better job than you do and puts all the different stats in the same article. So it's not like it's confirming your opinion, but it's confirming the fact that you at least dug out the right numbers. You know what I'm saying? Two articles hit me last night, but the first one was the Lehman debt. Matter of fact, let's look at that one first, because I got two articles here from last night that I dug up that are really spectacular. And one of them has to do is that everybody's been talking about, 10 years since the Lehman crisis. And it says here, this is by, it's a Bloomberg opinion article by somebody who I'd love to get on, Nir Kaiser, Kaissar. And he was saying that I'll ask you, in your opinion, who's the biggest losers in the last 10 years?
Biggest losers in...
Coming from the 2008 fiasco with Lehman, Bear Stearns, and everything.
Oh, I don't know. I'd have to think about that for a minute. Let's see. Who would be the biggest losers? Well, it's more interesting to know who the biggest winners are, but...
Well, same thing. Flip.
Which is the Lehman competitors. The biggest losers, I don't know, as much as anything, it's probably homeowners who lost property and haven't recovered yet.
Well, this man's opinion is the biggest loser is you and me. Because any discussion about winners or losers, of course, must start with the bank bailouts. The centerpiece of that rescue was the Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP, an October 2008 law that authorized the U.S. government to invest in banks and their tax and mortgage-related assets. Treasury invested $426 billion, ultimately recovered $441 billion. While it's true that it earned a profit, the reward was laughably inadequate for the risk that you and I took, essentially, what the government took with our money. The program bought assets that were deeply distressed, assets that ought to pay above market returns and prices recover. Instead, TARP generated a return of less than 1% a year from October 2008 to 14, while the financials earned a 5.3% for every one of those years. And this is the Federal Reserve through banks, a lifeline. And this is what, it's nice to hear somebody saying this other than me, for God's sake. The Federal Reserve, there's two. So about the Federal Reserve, through banks, so the lifeline, by holding interest rates near zero for years, the average effective federal funds rate dropped to 0.16%. This allowed banks to borrow money cheaply, and it sapped savers of badly needed income. Ding, ding, ding. There was another arguably bigger wealth transfer during the financial crisis between ordinary investors and more sophisticated ones. As the stock market tumbled from November to 2009, retail investors pulled a net $152 billion from stock mutual funds, and half of those redemptions, over $78 billion, were during the market's lowest points. So institutional investors, on the other hand, scooped up the bargains. They poured $43 billion into their share over 16 months. That's pretty interesting. So the wealth transfer they have is absolutely dramatic from during those years. It's just not me who thinks that this whole thing was an absolute. The people who gained the most were the people that arguably were, if there was a fault, were the people at fault. But now this one here,
or certainly the people who took the business risk and they were wrong, and there was no consequence for it.
Well, in this other article I'm digging, I'll give you the name of this one, Brian Chapata. From this is Bloomberg opinion, and they're saying that the debt load. Because I was talking the other day, and I was saying that I don't know if you were on, Kevin, where I was using my debt clock, which is not as good of the numbers as these guys have, saying that the actual regular people household debt has not increased very much since 2008. So people think that their income has gone up, right? So people's income to their debt is actually better than it was in 2008. But it's pitifully small compared to the increase in all the governmental organizations around the world that essentially have poured money into the system to make that happen. In other words, people have acted responsibly, governments have not. In this article, essentially, the world is a $250 trillion debt, Kevin. From 2008, it's up from $160 trillion to $250. So we've picked up like $90 trillion in debt. Now the question is, are the economies that much better? He says they're drilling down on this. The government's debt is up from, this is a $30 trillion increase since 2008. This is worldwide governments. I mean, it's spectacular. And then you look at, and as a percentage of GDP, it's actually higher. Now, financial corporations, theirs are up as well. But households are actually doing okay. So you see companies starting to go up. You see governments totally off the chart. And this guy is actually laughing. He goes, the idea that the central bank in Japan can unwind this when they've bought everything from everybody, he goes, it's nothing other than quaint. I mean, because nobody even dreams that number can be, quote, unwound. According to this guy, the idea that you're going to somehow just go back the other way is insane.
You have to go on something like a 30-year plan to pull that off and stick to it.
Well, yeah, but according to this, households...
Which is not what we do in government. We don't stick to anything.
He says financial corporations, the banks, because the government has done nothing but give them every profit in the world, they've actually trimmed their debt fairly dramatically. Okay? Non-financial corporations, however, are starting to go way back up. And households have actually come down as a percentage, but government is through the roof. And he says, let's start with the 15.3 trillion U.S. Treasury market, the world's biggest bond market. It has tripled in size since August 2008. In the prior 10-year period, it grew only by 1.5 trillion. In the last 10 years, it's grown by 7. I mean, if you look at these kind of numbers, like some of the guys like Tepper and people do, I think you get a whole different view of the world. Than just every time we go down because of a crisis, we just pound right back up. What's the problem? I mean, it really is a tale of two stories. I mean, I think. I mean, who the hell knows which one's right or wrong? But we will find out, I guess, one of these days. And I agree with you. If we can put it on some sort of a plan, maybe we can actually pile our way out of it. S&P futures up 5.25. Dow futures up 49. But that's going to take some deft work. Do you think we got deft workers that we got in government these days? We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures trading recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hollies, Mr. Kevin O'Neill, Mr. Jay-Z on the board. We have S&P futures up 5.25. We got Dow futures up 29. Looks like we have up morning here so far. Kevin, I'm digging into budget numbers here, and the thing that changed kind of all this, and then we'll talk about more interesting stuff, is that, and it kind of happened during the Obama administration, but it really happened like long before that. Because I've had discussions with people who are Republicans, conservative people, wherever, they're totally appalled by the fact that the Republicans have put this tax thing in. Not that they want their taxes done, but that we're back up to almost a $1 trillion budget deficit, and I mean we're pretty darn close to it. I mean, so we're up to what, $890 billion already this year, which is 30-some% higher than last year. I don't think we're going to make it to $1 trillion. We'll probably be $900 billion, but still, because September, I think, is not usually an expenditure month. I think it might actually be sort of a neutral month. But the economic standard that these guys have bought into, when I say these guys, really everybody in Washington, I don't think it's just the Dems, Kevin, is that the Larry Summers of the world, even though you may not like him or think he was Obama's guy, he's actually got a lot of people that feel the same way. And anybody who's in Washington that doesn't want to, essentially raise taxes or cut spending is in the camp of him. And who's the guy from the New York Times that won the Nobel Prize? How he did, I have no idea. What the hell's his name?
Krugman.
Yeah. Those guys have this fixation now that chumps like us, we're just old school, and, the thought of paying back debt is, it's so anachronistic that you and I should, grab our canes and wander out into the park and have a beer in the afternoon or something. So the idea...
But I could live with that solution.
Yeah, it's not such a bad... So the idea is, even though you and Jay-Z don't know it, that next year or the year after, if we decide we're going to grow by 4%, and whether it's inflation-adjusted, not or other, we're not going to worry about stuff like that, but if we're going to grow by 4% and the deficit grows by 3.9%, we're okay. That if you just extract that out four centuries, you've paid back all the debt, and you wonder why, people like the chief and Kevin ever bitched about a deficit in the world. They were just a bunch of idiots. The problem is, if you do that like we've done this time, and you've got this prediction that all is going to be well, and you take another $3 or $4 trillion into the bad hopper, and it doesn't end up being quote well, you're just $3 more trillion, behind the locomotive, but everybody loves that economics if you're in Washington. Let me get this straight: I get to run this tax cut through and make all my corporation friends happy, and boy, oh boy, it looks like that's going to do to my. Or if you're a Democrat, I'm going to increase expenditures to God knows what, some program, and boy, I'm going to make all those people happy. I'm going to get those votes. And really, it's going to end up being a positive thing 5 years from now. So I'm actually helping the world by doing this. The whole idea that you actually think you're trimming the deficit by lowering people's taxes, I want to know what those guys are smoking. But
so I am fine with lowering taxes. I just want to see the spending cuts that go with
right.
it. We need the spending cuts regardless. And also remember that, of course, Washington is the place where the definition of spending cut is that we don't increase it by as much as we thought we would.
Right, right.
So that's warped to begin with. But the problem is we keep doing this, and so even if you believe that the debt itself is not a serious issue, we were never going to pay it off anyway, you still have to deal with the fact that there's a cost to servicing the debt. And that cost, there's only two ways that can go. One is to that it just costs us more every single month, as we go through this. And you can do that. So what's government going to do? Well, they're going to do everything they can to suppress the cost, the interest rates. And so if we're going to suppress the interest rates, then every other investor in the world is getting essentially a below market rate for how they invest
and how they save and everything else.
So it reaches its way into so many places. And so I think the singular argument, without acknowledging the broader base effect, is just, you know, it's not simple-minded. It's dishonest, is what it is. That's where we have a problem. It's just so expensive to do this. Bump rates up a point. Now, what's the deficit going to be?
Well,
bump rates up a point, and then tell me where you're going to cut the spending to make that work.
Kevin, you're pretty good at math.
The
when
answer
you got
is you're not.
When you're $22 trillion in the hole, 1% is $200 billion, right?
Yeah,
and
where are we compared to history for interest rates?
We are in
a historically low situation.
We're at least 3% low, lower than where we ought to be, or historically have been.
This to me is the problem. Is that we're sitting here with government having undue influence on all markets, not just the stock market, but basically the entire economy. Because it's affecting the cost of debt, it's the availability of money for growth. It's finding its way in a lot of places. So I want the lower tax environment. I just want us to stop wasting money. Part of that is the brilliance of the design of our constitutional design that we've let get away from us, and it's just as simple as saying that. Money, the checks and balances on money spent locally are more likely to be good than checks and balances on the federal government spending.
Well, when you can talk your way into doing, I have to believe, Kevin, that if you and I sat in on these Federal Reserve meetings, that they would be so happy with themselves. I mean, they're patting themselves on the back so much, their hand and their back has to be red. About what a spectacular job they've done. And you and I might just say you've taken $350 billion a year out of the hands of savers, and you've given them to banks and the few people that can actually borrow from them. It's been the most incredible wealth transfer, other than maybe the Resolution Trust, that I've ever seen in my lifetime. And it's amazing how it doesn't get any kind of real press, because nobody's kind of put two and two together. And yet every single person who saved up $500,000, when I say that, it's not a lot of money for somebody who's, if that's their retirement, that's 17 grand a year out of their pocket for 10 years. That's like serious dough. By just having their money in the bank. Now, granted, you could have bought Amazon, but how many people did? It's a very incredibly, bad situation.
If we encourage people to be, to be a little more risk averse, as in the aftermath of the, of what happened in the markets.
Right. Well, yeah, but I'm saying you shouldn't be forced to, when you go to the bank and they're giving you no money. There should be a return there, and the answer shouldn't be. If you gave me a bunch of your money to manage, and you say I want to be very, very risk averse, and maybe I'd do some in the protected index program because I know in there the most I can lose is, you know, whatever is the number I can put on it that we would discuss, because I got puts and I, or I'd say, why don't we, let's put the rest and just leave it at PTI back in the day when we paid 3.25%. There, you should be able to do that. It's not up to me to say, wow, PTI is paying nothing. I'll put Kevin in, you know, sturgeon eggs from God knows where, and we lose, you know, all your, it's not up to me to change your risk profile, which is really what you've been hearing for the last 10 years. Well, everybody knows the Fed is forcing you to take a different risk profile. Why is that the Fed's job, Kevin? I mean, what's that all about? I mean, I'm saying that over the long period of time, I don't see how the middle class or people who used to have, you know, some kind of wealth in banks and so forth, even people like my parents, you know, I mean, they've been dead a long time. You know, they were never rich, but they had, you know, whatever, a couple hundred grand sitting in a bank making 5%. I mean, it was dough. It was money. It was, combined with Social Security and other stuff, they were able to be okay in a modest house that was paid for. But, I mean, you can't do that anymore. And the question is, why not? I mean, it's amazing talk. How do you give these people that 10 years back? I mean, I don't see how you do it.
Yeah, I don't see how you do it either, Tom. And, you know, in the meantime, we just have a market that may or may not want to go in different directions and just can't. You know, and when I say a market, I mean the free, you know, the business climate in general, not necessarily the stock markets.
But I would say, Kevin, that
it's now we're chasing after much more expensive capital, and that's stressful. That makes it hard for entrepreneurs to start businesses. That, you know, it interferes with a lot.
I think, though, that's gotten a little bit better in the last few years.
Maybe a little.
Yeah, a little bit. I hope so. Maybe I'm hoping more than I'm seeing, but I've seen a few more small businesses pop. The small businesses that do work like electric and plumbing and those kinds of things that are dealing with this pent-up demand in houses because people haven't done the maintenance, try and find one of those guys. I mean, they're busy as all get out.
Yeah.
I think. At least they are here. They
absolutely are.
So, I mean, I think they're...
You know, I'm disappointed I didn't get back in time to go to Business Expo last night, or I would have talked to a whole bunch of them.
Well, maybe we'll talk about that next week, bud. Hey, have a nice weekend. Who are the Irish playing, real quick?
Vanderbilt. Yeah, expect another lackluster performance.
Oh, great. Thanks. SP Futures up 5, W's up 43. Right back, Mr. Wayne Matson.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. but have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Jay-Z on the board. He's Mr. Wayne Matson. It's been too long since we've talked to Wayne. S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 28, Dow futures up 46, oil up 27, 10-year yield 2.987. So it's trying. It's trying to make this 3%. We'll see if it does, if it gets knocked back down like a whack-a-mole or whether it actually goes through this time. Wayne, how are you?
Well, you know, just trying to struggle through the daily occurrences of new insults from the POTUS, President of the United States.
Wayne, there was a guy when I was young, and I worked at Pullman, a big manufacturing place, but he ran into all kinds of people with different skill sets and so forth, and I ran into this one guy who was, I'm going to say, to this day, was the most brilliant man I ever met, a gentleman named Marty Leno. He was a manufacturing engineer. His family owned a heating and air conditioning place, so he knew all that stuff. He stopped going to college, taking classes when his youngest son graduated college. So he would be taking a philosophy course or this or that. And he was one of the guys that worked on Boeing helicopters. We'd go into the Pentagon, and they'd give him all his notes, and then he'd walk out, they'd search him to make sure he couldn't take a medic kind of thing. And I remember him telling me that, and people who are actually really smart are usually very humble about it because they realize how much they don't know. And one day he said to me, you know, I got all this education and all this stuff, and he says, I'm going to tell you, every single person on this earth knows something, whether it's a burglar or knows how to get into somebody's house or something that I don't. So I'm jealous of everybody because I know they all know something that I don't. Compare that mentality with Trump.
Yeah. I've been racking my brain over, you know, first of all, I don't think we've ever had a president quite like this. I mean, we've had some ruffians. Andrew Jackson was known as a ruffian in the White House, but this is almost like Watergate. Instead of Richard Nixon as the president, you've got Don Rickles.
Yeah.
This latest comment or tweet by Trump doubting that 3,000 people, almost 3,000 people died in Puerto Rico. I mean, he's deep into Alex Jones territory now. You know, you just look and shake your head. I mean, you know, this guy is not doing a stand-up routine in Vegas. He's in the Oval Office, which really, I think, based on, first we had the Michael Wolff book, Fire and Fury, then we had the Omarosa book, and she sort of reestablished her credentials if she ever had any, because she's proven most of what she says with the tapes, and now we have the Woodward book, and I know people that have issues with Woodward going back to how much he knew about Watergate and how much he was trying to leverage information into personal benefit. But all that said, and we've got the anonymous op-ed in the New York Times. I mean, when somebody's crying for help, no matter where it's coming from, you know, it'd be nice if somebody would pay attention. And the Republicans in Congress have been absolutely absent without leave on this one. And I think they're going to pay a heavy price in November.
Well, I try to be fair to everybody, even this guy. To be fair, the number of the... I have an article here somewhere, Wayne, where they talk about the Vietnam war, and that if you look actuarially, okay, that they think 325,000 people are dead that actuarially shouldn't be, that just happened to be in Vietnam, but not just people who are in the Army or in the Navy or the Air Force, Marines, but even contractors and all those kinds of things, whether it was Agent Orange, whether it was drugs, who the hell knows, but actuarially, there's 325,000 people that you can say, look, if you just took people at that age at that time and said, should they be alive or dead today, 325,000 should be alive, and they're not, okay? The quote, the number that came out, the 3,000 casualty number, I think is something like that, where they said, okay, all these people in Puerto Rico, if you look at how many at the time, what your expectation would be before your hurricane hit, there's 300,000 people that are, or 3,000 people that are dead that shouldn't be. It's not really the same as saying 3,000 people died in a hurricane. You're saying that somewhere between the water being no good or this disease not happening, you're saying that the after effects, I mean, in Trump's defense, the number really isn't 3,000 that, quote, died in the hurricane.
The one thing about it, if he had taken that storm seriously and he had marshaled, you know, it took him 2 weeks to pay a visit to the island. He spent 5 hours on the island in a photo op where he threw paper towels at people in a shelter. And if he had, you know, marshaled the resources of the military, the National Guard, you know, he did a terrible job. He could have gotten emergency generators down there, so people who were on dialysis may have survived. He could have gotten portable water filtration systems there, so people didn't have to drink sewage water and then die of the you know what happens, cholera and all the other things, typhus and everything else. And you know, I mean, we all remember George W. Bush with Katrina, how he had Air Force One fly over New Orleans, and you know, he's looking out the window, and that was bad. You know, heck of a job, Brownie. But this was worse because you know, after Bush was shamed into doing something, they twice as many people died in, you know, in this count in Puerto Rico. Now, you know, if you add the number of deaths in Katrina and the number of deaths in 9/11. You still have a number less than that number of people who died in Puerto Rico. And so, I mean, Trump, I think, just doesn't... It's all about him. It was all about him when he paid that visit to Puerto Rico, decided to get into it with the mayor of San Juan, who was actually out witnessing bodies, you know, being pulled out of homes. You know, we do know that Trump never wants to go out to Dover Air Force Base again, because that's the Armed Forces Mortuary Service, where all the bodies of U.S. service personnel come back to. He went to one where there was a Navy SEAL killed, I believe, in Yemen, and he said, "Oh, I never want to do that. That was too tough." Well, you know, if stuff like that is too tough, if stuff like going to console people after disasters is too tough, why don't he just get the hell out of the White House? I mean,
he's crazy.
This country and to the presidency.
Well, I have a question for you, Wayne, because you've got way more experience, and if you can answer it, boy, oh boy, I'm gonna put your picture up on the wall or something. But it strikes me that as you go, I mean, again, you know that my feelings about the man. But when I was a Ute, did he say Ute? We had wild fears about nuclear war with Russia, which maybe weren't so wild at the time, and they had, you know, they had fallout shelters, okay, and
right.
But I worked in the schools. Now, whether it was a good idea, bad idea, there actually was. In every school I worked in, it would say fallout shelter 80 people, and there'd be a downstairs, and I had the key to the room. I was key personnel, and I'd walk in, and there's 80 crummy cots. There's enough water for 80 people for 2 days. There's enough wafers. There's blankets. There's first aid kits. Whether it was a waste of dough or not, there's no question that in the Chicago area, between the subways, the schools, and a bunch of other buildings, we could have taken, pick a number, 400,000 people, put them underground, and dealt with something for 2 weeks. We at least did it. We never had to do it. I mean, there were drills and stuff. My question is, after this 9/11 thing, which we just you know, mourned again, rightfully so. We spent $90 bazillion on this homeland, this Patriot Act, this Homeland Security Act. Did everybody just? I mean, as much as I'm not a fan of Trump, but this is Bush's people were inept. Obama's people were inept. Today we have this hurricane hitting, and all these people are on the road going God knows where, and yet there is no plan for taking 200,000 people out of Chicago on marshaled rail cars down to Rantoul or someplace where there's an army base that's abandoned, that's set up with 200,000 cots and wafers and water just in case anything bad happens, a dirty bomb unit. We didn't get anything out of that money.
I mean, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of contractors made a fortune on it. Guys like Michael Chertoff, he after he was Homeland Security Secretary, I mean, he was on boards of directors of corporations that were profiting handsomely from all this stuff, like the new super duper body scanners they have in airports where you got to put your hands up like you're under arrest. You're absolutely right. You know, it's the common sense things that weren't done. As you say, you mentioned a dirty bomb, but what about like an outbreak of killer flu?
Right, right.
Some of the scientists are talking about.
But I mean, I'm not talking about bazillions of people, but you'd think everybody's coming up from Carolina, there should be five spots. Okay, here's an army base, we can handle 10,000 for 3 days. Here's another one that can handle five. We don't have anything like that. What exactly did we pay for? I have no idea, other than, like you say, fancy scanners to see inside somebody's behind.
Paid for a lot of guys that be enjoying themselves on their yachts in St. Thomas with their cocktails with the paper umbrellas sticking in the slice of orange. That's what we're paying for.
But Wayne, there's been changes. I'm going to go federal to local here. There's been changes that have taken place. In attitude and how our employees, for lack of a better term, do their job, that have been so fundamental that, and I don't think regular people, because I see it once in a while, and I try and be observant, but you can't be observant all the time. I mean, you're more observant than me, but does anybody even realize that in Chicago, with the use of cameras, we have decided that we're not going to have police anywhere to show a presence to stop crime, but we're only going to be there after crime to go investigate it through cameras. I mean, we're going to absolutely not be in harm's way, not 100%, but 80% not in harm's way. We're not going to be in traffic to stop somebody going 100 miles an hour. We're only going to be there after the accident when 10 of us show up. I mean, these are very fundamental decisions that I'm going to say most of the citizenry would be appalled.
Yeah.
It's been so gradual. But even on Washington, this money is being spent on all this stuff. We still don't have a place where we can send 300,000 people for 2 weeks if all of a sudden Chicago became uninhabitable or Columbus or something. The answer is no. We have no coordination between rail and buses. We have no way of saying, guess what, every Greyhound bus from within 30 miles of Chicago, be a better marshal up here and we'll have a drill to do that because we can get 300,000 people out of here on buses if we had to. None of that. I don't see anything, do you?
Yeah. Yet when it came to like separating the kids from their parents on the southern border,
yeah,
they seemed to have quite a plan to put kids in abandoned empty Walmarts and other federal facilities. First of all, I always believe that the Department of Homeland Security was creating a bigger monolith out of smaller monoliths.
Well, that's what they did.
Super bureaucracy. They can't get anything done. They've got cross purposes as far as their mission is concerned. You got the Coast Guard in there, which should have never been pulled out of the Department of Treasury. I mean, and I agree, it shouldn't be part of the Department of Defense either, but it shouldn't be in the Homeland Security Department. You got Secret Service. These are agencies with different missions, and they've created this huge mega bureaucracy where now we find out that money that was supposed to go to FEMA went to ICE instead, or detention centers for kids. First of all, even the term Homeland Security, I was at a meeting in, I believe it was 1998, when that term was first rolled out. It was the Warren Rudman Gary Hart Commission. And I'm sitting at a breakfast, and this guy's talking about Homeland Security. I remember I was sitting next to a retired military colonel who was then a pundit on MSNBC, and I said, what do you make of that? He says, I think the term sounded better in the original German, Homeland. I mean, where did that come from?
Yeah.
I mean, I never thought of myself living in a homeland. Maybe, you know, people in Nazi Germany did, or Stalin's Russia did, or apartheid South Africa did, but, you know, I mean, this was an alien term to me, and I think it just was part of, and then when 9/11 happened, you know, here we get this agency, and, you know, they seem to get anything they want, just with the Pentagon.
Well, we went through some numbers earlier, I don't know if you were listening, but in the last 10 years since the fiasco in 2008, the interesting part is individual people. Well, we've given so much money to banks that they're flush, okay, way more flush than they were in 2008 because we've given them other people's dough. Actually, households have not done so badly either. Their debt's up a little bit, but their income's up probably a little bit more than their debt. So they're not flush, but they're probably better off. The governments, though, the amount of government debt, I mean, when people talk to you on national TV and they say, look at the economy, look how much better you're doing, You personally, Wayne, probably owe $200,000 more in debt per person governmentally than you did in 2008. I mean, is your life $200,000 better this year than it was in 2008?
You can fool me.
Yeah. I mean, if you take that number and put it in there, it's really spectacular, and it's been amazingly uneven. I listened a little bit of it the other day. I should not be this jaundiced, shall we say. I can't listen to the Paulson, Geithner, Bernanke. I can't listen to those three guys talk for more than 30 seconds. To me, it looks like Mollary and Curley. And I know that's really harsh, and it's, I shouldn't say stuff like that, but do they honestly think they did a good job?
Well, Geithner, I saw him. I hadn't seen him for a while. He was on the other day, and I said, geez, this guy's like a form of Somonex. You know, listen to him for a minute, you're fast asleep. I mean, either, you know, I mean, but yeah, I don't know. It's the whole Washington financial operation always confused me. I remember talking to guys from a place called the Inter-American Development Bank, and I'm, you know, they could never really explain to me what they did, except, you know, they had jobs and they were well-paying jobs, you know, and I guess it's the same thing with the Federal Reserve. I haven't talked to too many people from there, but you know, it gets into like, what is this, alchemy?
Well, I mean, the guys that I talk to from the Federal Reserve are the people that actually make money flow properly around the world, and they're brilliant. And
yeah,
and the one woman who's, forget her name, I wouldn't say it on the air anyway. I mean, she's pretty much, she's like, remember in 24, Chloe. Her dime doesn't go out of the Chicago area that she doesn't okay, in or out, any check, whatever. I mean, it's spectacular how much these people have worked in the last 20, 30 years when they'll talk to you about how foreign clearing, how they used to have, because basically anything bad can happen will, right? I mean, it's just the amount of human nature. One of my guys will tell me that they used to be that when we used to buy all the, you know, Deutsche Banks and everything, Deutsche Marks before there was the Euro dollar. Then they would buy. There's trillions of dollars that all have to essentially settle every day. Well, it used to be, I think that, one way or the other, either the stuff we bought over there settled at like 11 o'clock and the stuff they bought over here settled at 12, right? So, of course, one day, one bank went out of business at like 11:30, and the whole thing even like a regular bank, I mean, not even a huge bank, the amount of foreign currency transactions they may have from all their clients going overseas back and forth, these correspondent banks, these are huge numbers every day. So these guys managed to get a system now where everything clears essentially the same second, which to me is, I mean, you know, it might be a problem that, you know, they'll never have again, but it's kind of worth fixing. You know what I mean? And stuff with how exchanges, how your stock market, how DTC interfaces with the Fed and with member banks. And what if the bank that they are dealing with has a problem. Does that mean people's stock trades don't clear, or should they go right to the Fed? I mean, there's amazing amount of work that actually real and people who care and are pretty darn bright go on behind the scenes on a lot of this stuff that it's so different from the policy guys just making sure the people in the room are rich and they don't care about us. I mean, it's like anything else. I mean, if you drop down, even in Chicago in the streets in sand, you're going to find somebody who knows an awful lot about streets, right? I mean, if the question is anybody ever listened to them? You know, type of thing.
Yeah. Right? Well, like they said, the old Mayor Daley, the one thing he understood was fix the potholes. That became important around Election Day, and get the snow plowed. I had a tangential, relationship covering like the Fed and the World Bank and these other organizations. That and the only time I actually did a stakeout at the World Bank was, I don't know if you remember, when Paul Wolfowitz, the president, was before an ethics board when they found out he had a girlfriend and he put her on his staff and there was this big hoopla. Now that's something I understand covering many Washington scandals over the years. President of the World Bank, he's got something on the side, I remember staking out the World Bank just trying to, get information about what was going on inside with this ethics review. And then his girlfriend came out, and I knew her from her photo. I kind of followed her to the metro station and trying to ask her questions. Well, I did write a story about that. And wouldn't you know that Larry Kudlow, who had that show on CNBC, called me up. He wanted to know what did you find out? I said, there is no honor amongst these thieves. If the minute there's blood in the water, even these two neocons, Kudlow and Wolfowitz, Kudlow wants to get all the dirty cannon.
Yeah. Well,
it's just sharks after sharks.
Wayne, this is probably unfair, because what I understand, Larry Kudlow is a really good guy from like Dr. J and people who've been to his house. But when he did was talk, he was such a Bush fan. He would talk about what was the greatest story never told in the Goldilocks economy, and all of a sudden, 4 months later, we damn near didn't survive, because it was all built on a house of cards.
Right.
And he actually used the term last week, the first time he's used it in 10 years, and I shuddered. I'm going, does that mean I got to buy puts everywhere? I haven't, but I'm sitting there going, I swore the next time I heard the term, I would head for the exits again,
Kudlow's not out of the woods yet. There's still a group of people who believe he's anonymous, the author of the Times piece. I don't believe he is because, some of the wording in there. I think it's like the scene from Murder on the Orient Express where everybody takes the knife and stabs the person. I think there's many people involved in the.
Well, I read something last week, and I want to run it by it because we don't have that much more time. I forget where the article is. I didn't save it. I always do, so it's me bad. Some guy who's involved, and he's tangentially, like you say, in the reporting industry, but not so much. More of a think tank guy. He said that his wife is a psychologist, and she read the whole thing, and she's absolutely convinced that it's a female. Because the way the words are put together and so forth, and I could never tell one way or the other what's male. I'm not a wordsmith. So this guy lobbed the name Kellyanne out there, and I doubt if it's her, but he thought that maybe it was her. Because
the job of a lifetime now, and I doubt she'd do anything to put that in jeopardy.
I would agree. But I'm saying, anyway, but it was interesting that this lady, who probably knows more about this stuff than I do, is convinced it was a female. I mean, who knows whether she's right or not, but I mean, would that shock you? I mean, who would we even talk about? Sarah? It wouldn't be Sarah. I mean, who
no, because I didn't see the word y'all in that op-ed.
That's true. I remember, did you ever read the book, Man Called Intrepid?
Oh, yes.
And, they said when they looked for the people sending the letters from the U.S. from the German spies that were here looking for like the inkblot thing. How did they used to do those? How would you put a whole thing in an ink? I mean, did you just use a camera and cut the size of the negative down? They said the hardest part was writing a letter that didn't sound weird when you had nothing to talk about. So they could tell the letters that they would look closely at the dots because the letter sounded weird. Plus, you had a German guy writing it anyway, so that his slang would be off. His euphemisms would be off. That sort of thing. So that's what this lady did.
Well, it's like people that were listening in on Morse code during the World War II. They could actually tell if somebody was German or not, because of the way they were doing the Morse operator, which is amazing that they could flesh that kind of thing out.
Well, from old TV shows and old movies, if you were doing Morse code and I was another Morse code guy, I could tell it was you
from the rapid nature that my dad was a Morse code operator in World War II. Actually, he could tell people based on the way the Morse, the person was hitting that key, which is amazing because it's it's not a natural language, but some people got to the point where they could actually figure out who was doing it, even if the Morse was in, as it often was in code.
Well, I wonder how long would it take? I mean, since you seem to know something, my dad was in a signal corps, so I don't know if he knew it or not, but how long would it take for somebody to learn to be a operator? Is it just like a week, a month, a year?
Oh, I think it took I think my father was in school for about a year to learn Morse code.
Really?
And other things. It wasn't just Morse, navigation and all the other things that go along with that.
Yeah, because it was quite a skill set when you think about it.
And just it was maybe about 8 years ago, the NSA actually got rid of its Morse shop. That they actually had people that would listen to Morse code. Apparently, some Russian fishing trawlers in the South Pacific were still using Morse code up until about 8 years ago, but they stopped, and then therefore, the National Security Agency got rid of its Morse shop.
We have less than a minute. We have 30 seconds. What do you make? We'll have you on long before. Right now, what do you think the November elections look like?
Well, if they're fair and we don't have any hanky-panky, I believe that the Democrats are going to pick up the House. I think with a comfortable majority, I would say anywhere between 15 and 20 seats. The Senate, in a tidal wave like this may be, we may see Texas and Tennessee go to the Democrats. There could be some pickups of the Republicans in like North Dakota and maybe Florida. Although I think I'm in Florida now, and Andrew Gillum, the Democratic candidate, is actually, his coattails are pulling along Bill Nelson, the Democratic incumbent who's running against the incumbent Republican governor for the Senate, Rick Scott. So that's an amazing thing that's going on here.
All right, Wayne, we'll have to have you back to talk about it, buddy. Good hearing from you. It's been too long, and we won't let it go long so long next time. Take care of yourself, buddy.
You bet.
S&P Futures up 5, Dow Futures up 46. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Arnold. She's Jay-Z on the board. S&P Futures now up 4. We just had the retail sales number come out, 0.1% versus 0.3, so that's not exactly the number I was looking for. So Dow's only up 26, NASDAQ up in 16. I'm not sure that's what is causing us to pause here a little bit. We're still up. Oil up 27 cents, 68.86. 10-year yield, 2.987. So inching like a tortoise with a bad leg toward 3%. DAX up 30. These guys are coming back a little bit. DAX up 30, only 0.2% now. FTSE up 19.2%. CAC round up 13.2%. So they're all even this morning over there. Asia, Nikkei up quite a bit. 1.2%, 273 points over 23,000, which we were below that for almost 22. So that's a pretty decent bounce in the Nikkei this week. Shanghai down 4.2%, 2681. Didn't get back over 2700. However, the Hang Seng is up 271. It's a full percent. They're over 27,000. 27,286. Like I said, oil up 27.7, 68.86. Brent up 9, 78.27. Brent tried to make a move towards 80 yesterday, and I don't know if it might have inched over, but whenever it gets to 80, it keeps wanting to come right back down. Natural gas 2.8, RBOB gas 1.98. Gold moving up just a little bit this morning, up $1.60. Silver down 2 cents, gold 1209. Jay-Z, what do you guys, traffic, weather, sports?
Thanks, Chief. Good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:36. Weather in Chicago today is going to be sunny all day, with temperatures going to reach up to 81, cool down to about 64 later in the evening. Phoenix is sunny today, with a high of 108 and a low of 76. Cubs won last night, securing a win after Baez's home run in the 10th inning, ending the game 4-3 against the Nationals. White Sox were off, and the Diamondbacks suffered a loss against the Rockies, ending the game 10-3. Kennedy Express lanes between Montrose and the Edens are closed due to an accident. Nothing else. Back to you.
John, how are you?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
I'm doing all right. What's the deal with you guys? The Diamondbacks, the Rockies, Dodgers in a big brawl out there. Who's going to come out on top? Because the Dodgers are getting close to the Cardinals on the wild card. Might be a wild card out of that division.
The D-backs towards the end of the year here. I think we talked about it before, a little bit. So I wish it could stay different, but it's not looking great.
Who do you like, the Rockies or the Dodgers? Obviously, got the huge payroll. They would be the chalk, but right now they can't shake the Rockies. Who do you think? Our buddy Josh thinks it's going to be the Rockies.
Yeah, no, I think that could be the case, to be honest with you, Steve.
I'm not as confident about the Cubs here. They're losing people. They're not playing as well. They actually are defense because they got people all over the place. The defense is probably a little worse. I think they're limping in, which doesn't mean, you know, they can get some people back to last week. It might be okay, but they are limping in. They haven't had Bryant playing third base now in a while. He's okay in the outfield, but he's no Hayward. You know, so they got guys with hamstrings all over the place. It's not the best.
And those injuries add up too.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, going into the playoffs.
I'm sure you've been inundated all week with the 10 years since the crisis story, even though, to be honest, Jen, that's all BS because, we had still have a couple of clients, well, obviously we'll be going nameless, but a client, here that was in one of the first, mortgage, he was in a Bear Stearns mortgage, something, limited partnership or whatever. I didn't dig into the details of getting the guy's underwear, but, he dropped $1 million in that thing, and it was 2007. So it was a long time before the quote crisis when Lehman went under. I mean, there were a lot of indications that, you know, you and I would not get trading the market. But if you were in that area, I mean, and I got a couple, and to this day, you know, you feel like slapping yourself on the head. That some stuff had changed because we're like in September, okay, so it was 10 years ago today that Lehman went under, but or this week or this month. But in April of that year, I went out to breakfast with a would-be client. We met, you know, it was kind of a house call. We met halfway. It was way the hell up in Schaumburg. And first time I'd ever been in one of those, what's the bread company with the sandwiches? We got to go on a brand.
1B, Subway, something like
no,
that.
No, what's the nicer one where they... The really different kinds of different buns and breads, and they have a bakery.
Jimmy John's?
No, it's and then they
Hot Belly?
No, higher class than that. Nicer. Anyway.
Paradise Bakery?
No. Anyway, I'll think of it. But anyway, so I meet this guy and his wife, and we're talking to markets, and she's very pleasant and exceptionally attractive, not that I noticed. And I said, well, you know, what's your story? I'm being nice. She goes, well, I just got laid off, but I work for a mortgage company, and I'm thinking, and she's very bright, and who the hell would lay her off, basically? And she goes, the place just kind of went under. And I said, well, it was still cold, so say it was in March, Jan, of 2000 or 2008. And I had no idea. I mean, you trade the market and everything, you look at what you look at. It was not a crisis that you and I could have. How would we know that Goldman and the rest of these places had off Goldman, not necessarily, but Bear Stearns and Lehman? How would we know that they had off balance sheet stuff that the auditors didn't pick up? That there was this massive undercurrent of borrowing in Japan and bidding up these things. That essentially we count on the Fed to watch for us because there's no way we can figure that out, right? So the Fed, of course, failed miserably. Then they put it back together in their own the only way they can, saving their buddies. And to this day, they're patting themselves in the back. Well, you know, okay, I forgot. I didn't cut the grass for 6 months, but I managed to go out and get 15 guys to help me cut it. I'm the savior. No, if you were the savior, you wouldn't let it go uncut for the 15 months, right? I mean, that's the way the world is. You create your own crisis, then you solve it and tell people you're the star, when in fact, you're the idiot for letting it happen in the first place. But anyway, she goes, yeah, we used to put together mortgages, basically with all we could steal, you know, the appraisals and all that stuff. And people would pay 6% higher than the base value of the mortgage. And I'm going, whoa. So you're telling me that you would put together, you'd package $3 million worth of mortgages, say, in like in April, and somebody come in and pay you $3,180,000 for that. She goes, oh, yeah. And it never even dawned on me, John, if there was that much money in the front end, the first finger in the pot got that much, I'm thinking how much by the time the thing got packaged four more times and up the chain, how much this was worth to somebody else. I mean, I don't know why it didn't dawn on me because it was right in front of me. You know, the other time that happened, we were playing softball. Here's this, talk about a stupid story, John. We're playing softball in the financial league. And when I was at Pullman, Bank America took Robin and I was her guest to see a play, and we went to the Metropolitan Club, and it was, they spent a fortune, buses and everything. This is like 2 years later. I'm on the training floor, and these guys, they had to borrow a ball for practice. And I'm thinking, God, this bank isn't doing as well as it were 2 years ago. Sure enough, like 2 weeks later, the stock collapses. You know, like, I don't think you could, I mean, I certainly wouldn't have, like, bought puts for my clients based on a team not having a softball to throw around. But it's amazing how you do, when you think back on it, there's always a hint. You know, and this lady gave me this absolute, you know, layup down the middle hint about this. This was 6-7 months that these places were already folding up.
Right.
And I never put two and two. I mean, I never dreamed. I read some article about there was $35 of leverage on every dollar of mortgages, and I just said to myself, that couldn't possibly be true, Jen. And yet it was. I mean, what make you, because all week now along, these guys are talking about the next crisis, and they start talking about all the things that happened in the last crisis. Yet in every crisis, every new one, it's stuff nobody ever thought of, right? Or most people never thought of. So when you go, when you look at it, I mean, obviously you can look at the debt numbers like I do and say, it's a dangerous number up here. Cause what if we don't get the growth? What if, I mean, you're looking at another tax increase at the very least. You're looking at something. Cause people are gonna have to pay this back. And by the way, they don't have it. Those kind of numbers I can look at, you know. But how does anybody know that there's something lurking behind the scenes that's gonna cause this particular firm or this particular state to go under and start taking a whole bunch of other people with, or this particular country? How do you dig that one out? Because all these people that know so much, they're on TV, and they're telling me what they already know. The last crisis, we can watch for that, right?
They're,
right?
They're just regurgitating old news, right?
Yeah, I mean, but I want somebody who says, "Oh no, nobody knows about this, but look at this, look at this number."
Right.
I'm looking for that person. I don't know if I've seen him. You know, I mean, have you? I mean, how am I going to imagine the next bad thing that happened that I know nothing about? I mean, I didn't even know what a credit default swap was, that somebody would be stupid enough. I mean, economically, when I talk about this, when I say use terms like stupid and so forth, if, for instance, I'm managing money for, you know, Daddy Warbucks, and I got $30 billion, okay, what sense would it make, John? I mean, economically, if you did the math and you're in your economics class like Jay-Z is now, if I go to Italy and I buy a bond and where I'm getting 9% return, okay, versus say 4% here, say in normal times, okay, and I sit there and go, yeah, but you know, Italy is a lot riskier than here, okay, so I'm going to go to some place, Goldman Sachs, Citibank, whatever, and I'm going to buy insurance on that bond, which is essentially what a credit default swap is. What should the cost be of the insurance? Should be 5%.
You figure the difference. Yeah.
Should be the difference. So how can I ever gain anything by doing it? It should all come back to the same price. And what was happening was some sleazeball, not like you or me, at Merrill at some place. And I still, why they didn't get back the money from the guy took from Merrill when he retired at that time, I have no idea. But what was happening was you and I would sell that at, say, $1 million. Now, of course, even Goldman Sachs isn't capable of insuring the entire country of Italy, right? But they made out like they could. So they would say, all right, we sold this for $1 million. It's really only worth $500,000 because of our models. So we just made $500,000, right? And guess what? John and Chief, and we'll even give Jay-Z, we'll throw her a bone. We're going to all take a bonus this month based on this sale. Well, in fact, some of these places did go under, right? I mean, AIG, this is, you know, anecdotal history of AIG at one point, didn't they have mortgage insurance on 40% of all the houses in California? Now, how in the God's name, if all of a sudden something happens to the economy and the price of houses goes down 30%, is one company essentially insuring 40% of a state? Wouldn't there be somebody on the AIG board that would say, wait a minute, where are we going to come up with that cash? I don't worry about it, it'll never happen. Okay.
It never happened until it happened.
But I mean, that's kind of what, the numbers were so mind boggling. How could you even, by the way, do you know of anybody who got money back from a mortgage insurance company? I don't.
No, I do not.
So everybody in the world buys mortgage insurance, and the house you bought at, at 230 and now is worth 150 and you're paid mortgage insurance. Did anybody ever collect on that? The banks? I mean, somebody must. Did anybody? Or they all just go out of business?
I mean, good question.
I mean, you would think, because there was a time here, especially if you were a trader or somebody, if you're an independent, if you're a plumber or electrician, when I say that, you're a 1099 employee. I mean, I've been a plumber. I've made 80 grand for the last 8 years, so I can't give you a mortgage because you're not working for PTI. Okay, well, I got news for you. Any firm can go under just as fast as you can not be a plumber the next year, right? But, I mean, hopefully not us. I mean, we're fine. But, you know what I'm saying is for some reason banks have made that ignorant sort of decision now, but they would say, you, Jan, or you, JZ, you've got to buy this mortgage insurance. Okay. So now your house goes way down, you lose your house. I didn't see you getting that check anywhere. I mean, I don't know how it's supposed to work, but it would seem to me like I just paid for something that I didn't get.
Yeah, something that sounds like it's one-sided, right?
Yeah. All right, so having said that, you know, guys are coming out with all their fears this week, the fact is the market looks pretty good, Jan. So we had to see our gold came back a little bit, and so did our silver, and I think we're going to have a real good week next week. And oil, XLE's kind of right back up. What do you make of this here? I mean, are we still want to be protected, I think, but I don't really have an issue putting a toe in the water here. Do you?
Yeah, no, I think I will, too. I think I'll dip in and, you know, test out a few waters. I picked up on last week or so, you know, a little bit more like in the biotech, things like that, after that pullback.
One of those indexes?
In the highs, but it's one of the indexes.
Which one of the indexes do you use? You and David use different indexes. Which one do you like? I mean,
I like
an index.
The IBD.
The IBD?
Idaho, boy.
Okay. IBB, so it's, is it options pretty liquid in there?
It's not the greatest, with options, so a lot of times I'm looking at a little more short term as far as getting in and out of it. Here and there I'm able to write some decent call options, put options I gotta be a little careful with about how I maneuver there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They are a little pricier.
Well, yeah, the puts are high, especially if you go out anywhere. I mean, we're still seeing, I've got my SPY up here, and while we're talking, I mean, today, we're not open yet, so I can't get the implied vols, but still it seems like the implied vols in the next month or so are 11, and if you want to go out to, you know, next summer, you're paying a 15. I mean, it's people still, for a long period of time, have been very concerned about, you know, far out. It's like, you know, we know there's a cliff between here and California, but we just don't see it today, you know, type of thing.
Right. I just have to be a little bit more creative than your regular industry, let's say, with that one, that's all.
What's the one that David uses? I should ask him, but he's got another biotech one he uses. It's not the same. I think I might like the one you use better, but I mean, it's nice to get in. Now, how many stocks are in these things, and what if one of them gets a cure for whatever baldness, and it goes from 20 to 50, how much does one of those indexes jump? I mean, is any stock 5% of the index or 10? Or it can't be like, you know, the FANGs are in the QQQ, is it, or the big?
No, it's nowhere near like that. It's a lot more balanced than the FANGs or you know, things like that that are you know structured that way. So your bigger biotechs are obviously a higher, you know, percentage of it, but nowhere near like talked about.
What I've been hearing, I'm kind of covering some of these areas because I think a lot of people want to hear it. Investment side is, what do you mean? The interesting part about getting information to trade on is obviously that's the sum of the game. And I was listening to, we've got our XLE position, which is the oil piece of the S&P, which we've actually had a pretty good year in because it's wobbled around enough that we were able to scalp the hedge enough to we've made money, even though the thing hasn't really moved very much. But, you know, that's nice that it happened, but you don't really count on that. I've heard four or five guys that seem like they know what they're talking about, whatever that means, come out and say because of their analysis of the Venezuelan situation, because of us screwing around with Iran, or maybe rightfully whatever we're doing to Iran, I don't know, that those two guys stay off the market, that there's no way we're not looking at $85 or $90 oil in a very short term, like the end of the year. We're already in September. And,
right.
And so I'm sitting there going, okay, well, if that's the case, I may lay off selling calls in this XLE because we might get a spike and I don't want to get caught. I mean, if it goes to 78,
right.
I don't want to be short the 74 calls, basically.
Right.
And then all of a sudden this report comes out this week, Jan, and a guy says, guess what? The numbers show that even though Venezuela is flat on its ass and Iran's, you know, having trouble, guess what? The worldwide oil production is the same as it was when they were online. So don't even worry about it. We're not going up. And I mean, how do you hear all these guys spouting statistics for 2 weeks and all of a sudden some other report comes out and says they're all wrong?
Right. And then next week it'll go the other way, right?
Yeah.
They'll say something and lean towards the other way. Yeah, that's really the dichotomy of, you know, the way our press is, you know, especially in our industry and, you know, obviously politics too, but especially in our industry where you get such divergent opinions on things that you would hope would be at least a little bit similar.
Well, the oil's always been weird because, I mean, President of PTI Securities, Dan, my bro, he watches this oil thing pretty much. And he said there's always been that you get the Cushing, Oklahoma number, which is obviously a private company. So who the hell knows how good that number even is. You get that one, and then immediately, then there's somebody else that comes out and says, yeah, well, that's a delivery port of virtually all oil in this country. That's if you have an oil contract, you got to deliver it to Cushing, right? I believe.
Right.
Well, but then somebody else will come out and say, well, yeah, but there's 15 tankers that people have leased around the world that are just parked somewhere that are loaded with oil because they can't even get it to Cushing. So, I mean, then that report will come out. Then there'll be another one saying, oh, God, we got all kinds of stuff. You know, we got storage in Russia or in New Orleans that's, you know, higher than it has been, even though Cushing is half what you thought it was to be. I mean, there's always been four or five, you know, fairly high-end, I'll say, oil reports during the week that can be very conflicting. I mean, clearly the one in the oil number in Cushing, if oil drops, but gasoline and diesel go up, it just means that they messed up the calculation of how much is already put through refinery versus how much they thought was put through. So, I mean, if you end up with, you know, a million barrels less of oil, but a million barrels more of gasoline, you're kind of in the same spot, right? So, I mean, it's hard to work through this stuff. I mean, it really is. Guys, that's a whole career, looking at oil stuff and biotech. John, if somebody dropped, you know, $90 billion in my lap and I wanted to get into the, you know, individual stock, you know, trying to pick the good ones, and which, I mean, you need a lot of people to do. And those are the two areas I look at, oil and biotech. I think there's some return there. I mean, if you actually research a lot of the companies, I'm not saying you're going to pick or I'm going to pick the next cure for cancer place, but I think that there's a chance, you know, you'd know, I'd know more which oil companies are better in the Texas basin and which ones do better. I mean, it's the idea that this Schlumberger can't get off its ass is amazing to me. It's $61. The reason why the XLE is not, you know, $80 is because Schlumberger can't move. And yet, when it gets down to 61, I mean, who knows, I mean, it's down to 61.02. Every time it gets close to 60, it's been a buy. And it bounces up to 65, 66, and it goes back down. I mean, it can't get out of its own way. But now, I'm not going to come out and say, gee, go buy Schlumberger at 61, because the one time I say that, it'll be 58 next week. You know, but it seems like it's got that range. And why can't these guys go anywhere? They paid a good dividend. I mean, they're involved every place. They're just, obviously, they're not in the hot spots or, you know, or whatever. And yet, that's the stock I look at as to why this XLE can't move. It's the third biggest stack in the XLE, right? It's Exxon, Chevron, and Schlumberger?
Yep, that's exactly correct. And you hit the nail on the head. I've wondered that myself, but they just can't get out of their way. It's been the dog, you know, the industry.
Well, when Chaney is, he says every time it gets below 61, you got to buy it. You know, and he's been right like 3-4 times. I mean, I probably wouldn't just go flat out buy the stack, but I mean, and he's convinced there's so much value there that if ever got in the 50s, somebody like a Warren Buffett would run in and scoop. You know, but all I know is when you start thinking that, oh, if your stack went down, somebody else would think it was such a value they'd go buy it. Boy, that's a, you don't want to have that mentality. You know, because even though it may happen. It's you start counting on that, John, I think you got trouble investing. I'm just saying, but
right. Oh, or you say, hey, what's wrong with that company that we're not seeing?
It must just people's views of growth in one company versus another. I mean, Microsoft. For so long, they were considered, okay, this is as high as they can possibly go. And the stock was, what, $35 for a decade? Damn near? And all of a sudden, they start doing a little better, and all of a sudden, hey, these guys are back to being kind of a growth place, and now it's 113. Yet, I mean, I'm going to say that from the 2000 crash to 2009, the thing didn't move, 2008. I mean, if you heard Microsoft talk about dead dough, that and Walmart, they both were $35 for forever. You know, S&P futures up 275, Dow futures up 22, NASDAQ futures up 15. John, thank you. Have a nice weekend, buddy.
JZ,
nice job. 3 days in a row. Oil up 25 cents. Be back Monday. Stacks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.